Welcome to the Audio Nowcast, sponsored by Apex and Westwave Audio. Now from the Nowcast Network Studios, here's Mike.
Hey, welcome to the Audio Nowcast. My name is Mike Rodriguez, and before we get going, let me introduce the guys. All of them.
Hello!
Over here on my right, we've got Bobby Somerville.
Hi, Mike! How are you?
Hi.
Next to him, we've got Scott Gershon.
Hi, Mike!
Next to Scott, we've got Brandon Birdside.
What's up, Mike?
And across the table, we've got Bill Burgess.
What's up, Mikey?
And next to Bill, we've got the one and only Rob Arbiter.
Hello, Mike.
Thank you. Thank you,
Rob.
Thank you.
Rob is working on show number 76 in a row.
Yeah. Wow.
76.
Wow.
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 76 trombones in a marching band.
So where's the cake?
Where is the cake?
That's when we get to 100.
They told me there'd be cake.
And today, joining us for the Audio Nowcast, we've got two friends of mine who are composers and musicians.
Friend is a loose term.
Mike and Mark Stitz from Dallas, Texas.
Hey, thank you for being here.
Welcome, guys.
Mike and Mark are great musicians and producers, and they've actually done everything from they've had their own band in the 90s. They had a Christian rock band called Millions and Millions, to they've done a ton of
children's. Pro bodybuilding.
Yeah,
a ton of
children's records. How many children's records have you done?
Just at 50.
50 or 60.
Yeah.
You're joking. 50, no. 60?
Yeah.
It's amazing.
Wow. Yeah, it's done a ton. I mean, they are a production machine. So
that's killer.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. Anyhow, guys, right off the bat, I want to talk about one thing. You know, we kind of talked about it before we went on air, was I just got an alternative controller. I got the Ohm from Lyrid Instruments. And it's really cool. Wow, this is going to be a long podcast.
Better than Omega.
No, it's really cool using it, and I hooked it up with Ableton and a couple other things.
No, it's Ableton.
It is Ableton Live.
It's with an A.
Enunciate.
It should feel like you're enunciating.
Instructor.
Help me. Ableton.
Yay!
Ableton Live. I know, I always make that mistake. But I just want to open it up. You guys use any alternative controllers? Bobby, do you use anything other than a keyboard? And
not alternative. I mean, other than what's around. I mean, if you call that alternative, meaning alternative to what?
Alternative to just working on keys.
Oh, I see.
Organic biometrics?
Yes.
I see. Yes, I do. I've got actually recently just got the C121, which is just a one-channel new endo tool. And I use a couple of XY, the hardware keys, basically, like a new QWERTY keyboard equivalents for...
Yeah, from X keys, right?
From X keys.
Yeah, is that the one that has that? Is that the big grid thing that you have in front of you?
Yeah, it's got 128. Yeah. I use that for my Ableton because I can... because I use an application.
Oh, you use an X keys one?
Yeah, I've got 128. It's 128.
Yeah, I've got one of those for my Pro Tools system.
It's so groovy.
Plugins.
It's killer. Uh-huh. It's lovely for Ableton because you just have piles of junk on
right,
it.
Yeah.
It's very, very nice. And then I've got a little thing that converts, it's called MIDI Yoke, and it's called MIDI Aux that converts QWERTY to MIDI events. So I can, because the Ableton Live. Had a limit where you couldn't, I think it was 64, I can't remember how many triggers, MIDI events you could use to trigger events, and with that you can get around it. Anyway, carry on.
What about you? Well, I know you, Scott, you use
I've got my flagship, which was the HOTS controller, which I've had for, I don't know.
Is that the one with the pads?
Yep. It's 128 pads, and it's the size of a small bus. But it's great, but there's no moving parts. It's just a membrane. I've got light controllers. I've got octopads, or different kinds of drum pads that I use. Guitar controllers. Anything other than a keyboard, because the basically keyboards have to have a what's it called when the keys go up and down?
Momentum switch.
Basically, the time that it takes. I mean, Rob can go... Blah, 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 blah.
The recovery, you mean?
The recovery. On a keyboard, you have to wait for it to come back up.
Right.
And sometimes I need things to be super instantaneous. So, well, like...
No coffee before a podcast again, Bobby.
It's just kind of instantaneous, you know. No lamb. I did True Lies with octopads.
Oh,
the machine guns.
Right.
So, you know, I was just doing paradiddles with machine guns. So, you know.
That's cool.
Who says a music degree doesn't work out after all?
Right? Oh, of course not.
Throw some paradiddles on.
Brandon, what about you?
Right, left, right, right.
Nothing too out there. I've got some Akai stuff, some M-Audio stuff. I guess the most, you know, interesting, which is not interesting compared to any of that, is my guitar rig foot controller, you know, which I can use to control things. It's just like a wall type, basically. Not too interesting.
I want a Buchla stick.
I completely forgot. I built a controller for my for Contact. I built a bunch of custom scripts. So I built a 16-channel MIDI controller, which has four sliders and a bunch of knobs and buttons, which is pretty useful. Cause it just fits in my hand, so I use it as a kind of additional thing. It's very useful.
That's cool. How about, and you guys build?
I have the APC-40, which is cool.
How is that? Is that cool?
That's the Akai,
it's pretty
right?
cool, yeah. That's it. I mean, I've got all the nano keys and the nano pad and the nano control, and then I have a cat controller.
Yeah,
that's and cool. I also have one of the prototypes of the Roland D-Beam. It's before D-Beam Bottom or Roland Bottom.
That's cool. Mike, Mark, you guys,
the D-Beam is cool.
Yes. Just a Triton, you know, and then I do have an old Yamaha G50 like guitar controller.
Oh, yeah.
And I put a. Yeah. The GK pickup on an old Dean Cadillac, you know, back from the 70s.
Great.
And it works pretty good for, you know, anything that needs
keys. Or
yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. And different input. Just great.
Yeah. Just different voices. Different feel.
What about you, Rob? You?
I have a lot of alternative controllers.
I have, yes.
But it is. You know what? I mean, from Chaos Pads and the see-through music
right.
thing, which is weird and cool, and the
like a rotary speaker going.
As I think about the shelves and shelves, yeah, there's a lot of alternative controllers. But you know what? I find usually most of the time I can get what I need out of a MIDI keyboard. Okay. I use an Oasis, a Korg Oasis, as my main controller, and it's really responsive, and it's easy to set up different zones on different channels to do different things, and. Most of the time, because also space is always a problem.
Right.
You know, you don't have, no studio has enough tabletop space to put out every alternate controller you'd want to.
Right.
And I have so many keyboards and mice and MIDI keyboards that the idea of clearing off a bunch of MIDI keyboards to make room for some controllers that would be useful but not as versatile.
Right.
I don't usually do it. So every now and then for a specific project I might bring out something alternative, but I usually do it with MIDI keyboards.
You should get like a rotating table that you hit a switch.
I thought about it.
Well, like an
and some of the things, like I had the original, was it Dimension Beam?
Yeah,
right. You know, those right. controllers yeah. and everything. I love all those things, but they're not something you're going to use every day.
No.
Well, the reason why I brought it up is one thing I found out is when you work with a controller and you take a parameter that you're used to like using as a pot and you put it on a slider, it really, you know, it starts. You know, you're thinking in a different direction. And I found it's a great way to spark my creativity when you hit a bump in the road. Just, you know.
It's a performance.
Yeah, exactly. You just throw, you know, you start controlling it with different parameters, you know, and the next thing you know it, you find a sound that you like and you're creating stuff and it just really kind of sparks that. I mean,
he's got to connect it to the Wii. Or the Natal, you know.
I've seen
you start
online.
Moving around the room and
yeah.
then
they have that, yeah.
Yep. I've seen that.
They have that. So, you know, I just wanted to bring that up because just in case if somebody's out there and they're, you know, stuck in their rut and they want to find something to give them a little juice, a little...
Go buy any Chaos Pad.
Yeah, Chaos Pads are amazing.
Chaos Pads are great.
So everybody that bought one, I'm not sure how many people used one.
I've used mine a lot.
Do you?
Ton. You know, and the nice thing about it, of course, is the little XY pad is obviously not mechanical, so it doesn't wear out. I use the hell out of it. I use it for... controlling press rolls of orchestral samples, so I go. It's kind of nice because the slider would wear out when you do 1,000 times it.
Yeah,
it's really very useful. And I also have two bus come out of my sequencer on the audio side and it goes into it. So if I do a little loop or something, I can just stick it through there and actually play around with the audio.
Nice,
really nice. Recorded by.
I just, you know, I think it's a great way, like I said, to spark some imagination and get your creativity flowing.
Definitely.
One thing I want to bring up, and one of the things we're going to talk about
dinner.
Is... no, we were having a conversation over dinner. I went to dinner with Mike and Mark, and we were talking about creativity, and we're talking a little bit about inspiration. And what I wanted to talk to you guys about is... When, you know, a lot of people listen to a record and they get inspired and they want to emulate that record. And And,
when
does it cross the line between, you know, between inspiration to plagiarism, you know, when you see some of these famous cases of people being sued and things like that? I mean, I'm sure you guys, with the work you do, you've had to emulate music, for your clients all the time.
I think if your initial reaction to a piece of music you really like is that you want to copy it, there's something wrong. I mean, that's not inspiration. Well, that's not inspiration. I mean, inspiration, for a lot of people I know, if you hear a piece of music that you love, it inspires you to want to go make music, but not to copy what you just heard. I'm not sure about that.
If you listen to Heart, a lot of the inspiration that they had was Led Zeppelin.
Right.
But you don't sit there and say that, you know, Ann Wilson sounds like Led Zeppelin. But a lot of her singing, I think bands that you grew up with or you inspired through your career, there's no way for little influences to not come into your music.
That's kind of automatic, I think.
Yeah, so is it plagiarism? No, but are there things that you just love?
Right.
You know, within certain genres? I mean, there's so many artists that sound like they had something, you know. Does John Mayer sound anything like Eric Clapton? I mean, you look at some of the people that were inspired probably growing up and learning, and there's no way that they can't interpret their, you know, different styles.
But you still see these cases of well, which one were we talking about today?
The Coldplay. Yeah.
You know, getting sued.
Yeah, that's called plagiarism, though. That's not inspiration.
No, that's what I'm saying. But do you think it was plagiarism?
Yes, next question.
I mean,
100% no
when you're inspired by something, I mean, if you're a hired writer for something and you get asked to do, and we all do all the time, get asked to do something in the style of something else,
right.
You listen to it and you go, okay, well, this is obviously what the guys are doing, or people doing on this track, and I know what they're doing, I know what the client likes about that, so let me do something like that, but avoid it, because you don't want to play it, you don't want to copy it, you really use it as a thing to avoid. In the Coldplay case, I mean, but I think it was the same key as well, wasn't it? It was the same key?
The versions I heard were the same key, but I don't know if they'd been shifted.
Maybe they've been shifted.
But even if not, it's the same changes.
I mean,
it's the same basic melody.
It's nearly impossible, if you think about the options in music and technology these days, to actually do the same progression, chord progression, in the same key, let's just say, and the same changes in the song and the same melody, very close to the same melody, like, you know, unless, and of course that does happen where people are subconsciously influenced by something, but it's pretty hard to do that and realize, oh.
But don't you find, forget even plagiarizing a song, but with all these loop libraries out there, and everybody using, like, oh, Ableton's really great, everyone's basically dipping from the same, you know, waterhole. Forget about just plagiarizing a song. All of a sudden, everybody has a similar sound.
Well, yeah, that's true.
If anything, like, I've heard that lick over and over and over because everybody's using it as, you know.
But in the electronic space, you have to have a certain sameness to the vernacular for these DJs to play it.
Mm-hmm.
So the kick drums have to kind of evolve, you know, and you got to update your kick drums. And so there is some direct, in that space, some direct,
I mean, it's always happened, even back in, if you go back to the 70s, if you use an example earlier, people would say, oh, I really like that, this guy's Rhodes sound. And everybody had a Rhodes of some type, whether it's a suitcase or whatever it was. And they would stick a kind of chorus on it, and they would get the same sort of EQ. And they wouldn't be exactly the same, but you could hear it.
But I'm not talking about the same sound, because I understand what you're saying.
I'm not talking about the same rhythm.
I'm not talking about the same, like, road sound. I'm talking about the same loop. Lick.
Yeah, sure.
Like a little motif. You hit it. I mean, I've seen a lot of composers, and you look at the sequences, and they're footballs. There's no playing. They hit a key, it does this little loop, they hit another key, they see another loop.
Right, and luckily there are still musicians to create those loops that those editors can use. At that point, they're being editors, they're not being musicians.
Yeah, it's more people. When I hear these big orchestral scores, I know these guys aren't playing. You can't play those licks on a keyboard because the keyboard can't play that lick. I mean, unless, I guess you can program it if you were lucky, but a lot of these giant runs with all these strings, they're not going, ba-da-da-da-da-da-da.
No, you know, and the cartoon guys have a lot of key switching going on.
Oh, yeah.
And they got drum corps on one keyboard down there, and all those riffs are one key down and one key up, but that's Nickelodeon. Cartoon.
Yeah, but you look at a lot of the working musicians, and it's a ton of it, that I'm just seeing all these, you know, sequences with footballs on it. And then they'll get a solo instrument to top it on top.
Now, let me ask you a question. If you were inspired by a piece of music and you wanted to write a piece of music, what would be the one thing so that you don't get accused of plagiarism that you would change up? Would it be the bass? Would it be the rhythm? I mean, what's the easiest thing to
do? It's a very simple rule, actually. It comes down to what a judge or a jury would say. So if someone would listen to your piece of music and say, oh, yeah, it sounds like you copied that, then you're done. So it's not, you know, if it's a song where the bass line is featured,
right,
then don't copy the bass line. Seriously, it's whatever a judge would say. If common sense, if your mother would tell you, wow, those two songs sound similar, then it's too close, basically.
Technically, there was a term when it was nine notes in a row. That was the technical, I think, at least for a couple of years back. I can't remember. I don't know when exactly. But that was the formula. They said, well, if it's nine sequential notes in a row that resemble the other one, then yes. But then they said, well, melody is the most important part of plagiarism. If,
right,
if you sing a melody,
right,
obviously, if somebody sings a melody, you can change the chords underneath it and play relative chords that would marry to that melody fine in a different center sort of thing. The same melody would apply, and you would go ahead and walk off singing the melody. You wouldn't go off walking off singing the chord structure, although the melody's notes really would be playing different relationships over the different chords. It really is still plagiarism, so you have to definitely watch that.
Now, let me ask you, what about, like, some of I worked for a couple of R&B producers in the 90s, and what they would do is they actually would bring a live band in to recreate some of the old R&B styles, and you know what I'm talking about.
Mm-hmm.
Plagiarism or just finding
a
workaround?
You're talking about a genre, not a song.
No, there's a guy in New York City.
They would actually take licks of, like, famous records and just recreate them so they wouldn't have to pay the...
Like with the Steve Miller Band?
There's a guy in New York City. He's the Logic user. I forgive me because the name slips me, but his whole career is sample replacement. Somebody can't get clearance for a big piece of audio. He gets in there and does it exactly.
I just did that for Greg Pagani for his... By the way, Greg just got nominated for 2 Grammys.
Did he really?
Congrats, Greg.
That's awesome.
Gregory, yeah.
Greg was actually on the podcast about...
Seven podcasts ago.
So if you want to check him up, I'll put a link on the website.
And now he's nominated for Grammy, so you have to treat him with some respect.
Yeah, right.
You know, what's interesting is, like, a lot of companies are even plagiarizing themselves. I mean, Rob and I, we did Pascal Musical. We can say that, can't we?
Yeah.
And it's like, okay,
I guess we can.
I guess we can now. And the thing was, they said, we don't have a contract with the singers, and we want to do a video game kind of based on it. So here's what we need you to do. We need you pretty much to reproduce everything.
Not pretty much.
Yeah.
We need you to absolutely rip it off 100%.
Yeah, and I mean, get singers that sound exactly like them.
Wow.
Yeah. And the Cheetah Girls, and High School Musical.
Wait, did you guys do the dancing too? I would have liked to seen that.
Scott did the dancing.
but Rob wore that cute little...
You know what? One question I want to ask you guys. Have you ever been ripped off? Any of you been ripped off before?
I have. Big time.
Really?
Yeah. Actually, it's happened a lot of times. It happened a bunch of stuff I did with Stevie. I definitely heard my drum samples or sounds very much like... my sounds showing up on other people's records, because a lot of times with Stevie, drums would be out in the open on his albums, or there'd be a drum fill to start off a song or a drum breakdown in the middle. I definitely heard a bunch of my sounds showing up on other records. Also, in the days of programming, like, you'd have DX7 sounds and things you design yourself, got ripped off big time there. But the way I got ripped off the most during when we did the Godzilla trailer,
right,
that was a pretty unique trailer at the time. And so many trailers after that sounded exactly like it. And I didn't know how to take it. I was just upset that I wasn't being paid to write the stuff. It's like, maybe they didn't know I was available. I would have happily ripped off myself. But someone else was out there, and the Godzilla trailer, everything sounded like that for about 6 months afterwards.
Wow.
I actually had a client come in to me and said, I got the sound I want you to kind of reproduce, and it's really good, and I want to use it for this, I think it was a scene of a movie. So I said, here's the sound I want you to use. And it was one of my sounds. And I said, really? Where'd you get that from? I said, I don't know. A buddy of mine gave it to me. And I went, well, that's my sound, actually.
Wow. Well, I would imagine, you know, the Hollywood Edge sound effects library is probably
one
of the most...
Yeah, I came up with a bunch of really cool... I came up with a bunch of high-tech sounds, and next thing I know, I saw it in Star Trek, one of the early Star Treks. I'm like, wait a minute, that's all my what? And I go, how did they get it? Oh, Premier Edition number 20, you know.
It's I was just looking at Premier Edition for some... Horse hosts just a couple weeks ago.
Yeah, it was a Premier Edition 20 early on. I was like, oh, for a Solar Crisis.
Going back.
Yeah. Well, Premier Edition, I mean, come on, that and the 6000 series for Sound Ideas, those are like, you see those in everybody's library.
No, I love it when we'll go to a client and they'll go, you know, we just asked you to do a bunch of design and you gave us a bunch of Hollywood Edge stuff. We are Hollywood Edge. We can't even use our own stuff anymore.
Funny.
Bob, you ever been ripped off? You ever?
Well, you know, ripped off. Yeah, I have. Sure, I have a couple times. One of the funniest things, I think I met you on this date. I was doing Master of Champions. It was a show for ABC that, like, lasted a second. But anyway, he was auditioning keyboard players for the band. We had to put the band together.
You know, in defense of the show, it's just because it was horrible.
That's true.
But you were brilliant.
But you were brilliant.
I was outstanding.
You did a good job.
You came down, didn't
you? Yes. I saw you at the taping, man. You
rocked the house.
Yeah, you're the only
reason it lasted as long as
exactly.
it did.
Exactly. All of the first show. Anyway, it was quite funny, but somebody came down to audition, and one of the tracks he was doing to audition, he did like electronica sort of thing, and it was a Carmina Burana track. It was a remix, rather. Yeah, exactly. And he did a whole like Ableton thing with D-beams and stuff with it. And I'm going, man, I know that song. And he's going, yeah, he's doing his whole show. And he goes, you know, what do you think of the audition? I thought, yeah, it's really great. I said, where'd you get the track from? He said, oh, it's some CD or something. I said, well, that's actually my track. And what he'd done is he'd EQ'd the music out so he could just hear the vocals through it. So I said, I've got the real vocals. I can give you the whole track. And you still use it in Vegas in his show.
I know who you're talking about.
I didn't say his name.
I'll just let it go there.
Wow. Yeah, exactly. It's just what it is.
What a small town.
Yeah, he works in Vegas, so.
Hey. How about you, Mark and Mike? You guys ever had anything lifted?
Let's see. One thing comes to mind, there was a. Was asked to write a record with an artist. And so we finished it, let their administrator do the paperwork, and it came back, and I just picked it up and glanced at it, and it was like an 88-12 split on music that, you know, that actually, you know, I had written first and let them you know, make additions to. And anyway, so yeah, you know, that stuff happens all the time, really.
That's nice.
Yeah.
Well, anybody who works for any one of the big corporate TV stations must really knows that same feeling as
well.
Oh,
yeah.
Yeah, yes.
So,
how do you like 100-0 as a split? Will that work? we came up with 100-0.
But with a reversion, just in case that zero gets anything, it reverts as well.
Absolutely.
Exactly.
Okay,
it's Greek love.
The last thing on this, when you do get, you know, commissioned to write a piece and they want you to copy somebody's piece.
I can tell you what to do.
What do you do, Bobby?
What I personally do is I you know, obviously you get asked to plagiarize stuff. They say, well, we don't want you to copy it exactly, but, and then, you know, so you submit something, which is, never do anything in the same key, because you're just asking yourself, it's unfair, it's obvious. If you do something in the same key and the same chords in the row, you know, if you're a major, minor chord sequence, they just say, and you're in the same key and you're using the same sort of production, it's kind of getting close to it. So you want to be careful, avoid that. Definitely copy the tempo. I can say go ahead and copy the tempo because that's going to work for the cuts for people. Do that, definitely. And copy the form of the melody. So if it's da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da, I'm not singing notes, just say it's that.
Right.
Then realize that it's groups of notes and really understand that it's da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. Use those groups and change the notes around and absolutely do it, but don't copy the melody. But what the best thing to do is submit the client something that you're happy with, that you feel comfortable with. Just know that when you're hired to write a piece of music, most people ask for indemnity, where you're submitting the music saying, I'm writing this for you, and I take full responsibility if it's plagiarism. And that's basically it.
Wow.
And their MO to you is, we're going to pay you until we're happy with what you do for us. So what you do is you submit something that you think you're happy with that is not plagiarizing and is not anywhere near and does the job which you think is fair, and then they'll say, okay, no, it's not close enough. We want it to be this, da da da. So eventually you say, okay, but you keep that first piece, and you keep that because that's what you submitted. Now, from now on, you're doing what they're telling you. They're directing you to get closer and closer, and you keep telling them, you're going to be closer and closer here. And that's really it.
Wow, you're a genius.
No, no, genius.
You know, we've all been burned by
we've
that.
Been, yeah, definitely. We've all been got to be careful.
I'll tell, I'll tell you one funny one. I can't say names, but Mark and I were working with an artist who loved the mirror more than, you know, life itself. And and like, you know, had dessert daily but never had humble pie, you know, like ever, ever. So he came, he sat us down. We were working on some stuff one time. And he just said, you know, he said, I feel like my presence, like if I come in the room, and use the word aura, he said, you know, if I just feel like my aura causes you, you know, to steer to write in a certain direction. So I want a full, you know, half or third of the song. If there's two people in the, you guys, you know, or if it's me, I want a full split if I come in the room because I just, I feel like it's going to steer you a certain way.
Lock the doors?
Yeah. No, no. So the craziest thing was whenever he was around, it was like a lot of, it got very quiet. So there was not a lot of creativity, but.
That's sad. Yeah. That's some sad, sad people.
You talk about editors, sorry. Like, I got caught in a picture for Disney where I did a, they had, it was a regular orchestral tracks, and then they had a chase scene, and they came to me to make it sound like The Matrix at the time. And so I got in there and did some stuff with it and cut it up and beats and breaks and all of it and sent it off, and I got my advance, and that was it. And the production was being done in Canada. And so I get it back. We start get back copies from the editors in Canada. And my beats and my breaks, because I stemmed it, and elements of my tracks are now spilling out through the whole film. And I brought this up, and they're like, sorry, the percentage of people who are Canadian versus the percentage of people who are American on this film is tipped. So if one more American spends one more hour on this, we don't get the tax break. Sorry.
Wow. Nice.
Wow.
And that was it. And that was getting ripped off.
Yeah. Oh, that sounds fair to me.
Hey, I mean, but did I say that I was Canadian? Bobby.
Randy, you're in a unique situation because when you work on trailers, you actually have to, a lot of times, augment already established songs and things like that.
Yeah.
I mean, do you run into any kind of problems with that, with any of the labels or any of the...
We haven't yet. Our sort of loophole is that I will never mix anything down together. It's always sitting as a separate cue in the Pro Tools set that I give to the editor. So nobody's ever said anything so far.
Because like the T4 trailer,
yeah,
actually
had a drum beat behind it.
Is the best version of that song.
But if you're, you know, I think Nine Inch Nails is probably like, you know what, we got our three, you know, I guess I can say our big chunk of money, and they were happy with that. They probably didn't complain too much. But we did have a similar situation just happened. It's exactly what Bobby described, where we brought in. I'm so thankful. I was too busy that day to do this rescore myself. So we hired an outside composer and rescored a piece of music. You know, it was different enough. Client asked for 6 rounds of revisions. Yeah. Make it more like the original. Oh, put that drum fill in there. Do this. We want it more like that. And months go by. They license it, you know. And then they're getting sued by the band who did the original song. Right?
Wow.
And they're trying to throw it on the composer.
Always.
The film studio is taking
no responsibility. I had the same thing with the... With it, oh, there it is. That's the song I wrote off it.
I'm hearing music.
We're getting cut off.
I forgot to mute the track. I'll tell you what, we're going to take a break.
We're getting cut off.
And when we come back, you can finish what you're talking about.
I think it's pleasures in my ears.
All right, we'll see you on the other side.
You're listening to the Audio Nowcast, sponsored by Aphex and Westwave Audio. Have a question for the panel? Would you like to be a guest on the Audio Nowcast and live in the LA area? Email us at audio@nowcastnetwork.com.
Hey, welcome back to the Audio Nowcast. And before the break, before we cut Bobby off,
hello!
We were talking a little.
Hello!
We were talking a little bit about plagiarism and the fine line between copying or and ripping somebody off or just kind of using
actually,
them as a little influence.
Is there plagiarism with modeling? Forget about just music, but keep modeling everybody else's technology. How many LA-2A models are there? Or but
they don't call it a licensing fee, don't they?
Well, not if they called it that, you know, the British compressor or well, the black compressor or the white one or the opto compressor.
I'll tell you a story that had to do with that.
And
there was a famous plug-in, a famous hardware manufacturer that makes really great hardware that you can fit in a lunchbox. That's right. I'm talking about API. Anyhow, there was a
Unique Recording
made a plugin that was supposed to be the digital version of their compressors and the EQs, and you couldn't at that time, and you still can't keep them from like emulating the look, but API had their knobs copyrighted. So they could not copy the knob, so they had to change the plugin artwork so that it didn't look like an API knob. And so that's what basically stopped them from, putting out the plugin that looked exactly like a 550 or any of the other plugins.
And then Waves did a much better job emulating stuff. And
yeah, absolutely. Because then, they sell the writing on the wall, yeah, and they license it, and you get a better product, and everybody's happy. But
I just pulled up a TAL chorus, T-A-L. It's a freebie.
Yeah.
And it's exact chorus off the Juno 60. It's like a screenshot. And yeah, I mean, they're fussing with Roland, right? If they can get in there and fuss with Roland.
You're talking about plagiarism. I mean, we all evidently make music for a living or media for a living. We get ripped off nonstop on the internet. I mean, the whole world is one large ripoff.
Oh, that's true.
I mean, so what? It's like,
is that the takeaway message?
Yeah, it's just basically it. It's like,
give us some hope.
Yeah. Yeah.
If it can be digitized, it can be ripped off. And that's it.
True.
And if it can't be digitized, we can digitize it and then rip it off.
We'll put a hip hop song.
Exactly.
You were going to make a point before we...
I did for a large network, I did a bit of music. They asked me to get closer and closer and closer and closer and closer. And basically I did. And they got sued. So they started to come after me, and they said, who did you do it for? And I said, them. And they realized that I didn't have much money, so they went to them. and they settled.
May the deeper pockets prevail.
Yeah, definitely. And they're like, what are you going to do, make him pay you anything?
Wow.
But did they end up having to cough up some money?
They coughed up.
Oh, they did?
Coughed up some good coin.
Really? Wow.
And they got a good license sync deal for the band on the back end. Because they said, in that case, if you really want to use it, you can use it for 3 months for, $80,000 a month. Carry on.
Nice.
Wow. In the wrong business. Well, anyhow, if there's a lesson to be learned from all this, is you just really got to watch what you do and protect yourself, right? Wouldn't you say?
Be honest. Just don't. Yeah. I mean, if you feel, if you know you're ripping somebody off, if you didn't, you know you're ripping people off, and just if you feel happy doing that, then
if
it's
you
up
go,
to you,
man, you can't tell the difference between my tune and their tune. Well, I did a great job. Oh, wait a minute.
But you know what? But it's hard when you're work for hire though, because you want to keep that client.
Well, I mean, the client won't pay you unless you do the job that they want.
Yeah,
or they'll go to somebody else.
But does Tom Newman sue himself? He even said to me, I did a project with him, he goes, I've been writing Shawshank Redemption
for
you can start mixing them up and playing Shawshank, American Beauty, Horse Whisperer.
Yeah.
And he even said, admits it. They love the cue. They keep
coming
back.
Hey, what you
going to
do? There's a lot of us doing it.
Actually, what I heard from our lawyer at work told me about this situation. It's like, you need, if it's getting close as a composer, you need to go to the client and say, look, it's getting close, you're making it closer, we need to bring in a musicologist to determine how it's going to be. And just to cover your ass, say that. It may save your ass.
In an email, say that.
In an email. Absolutely,
absolutely
correct.
Absolutely.
In writing in some way.
And keep the first draft you send in.
Yeah. Actually, better than writing that email is find someone else who wrote it and just make a copy of it and change a few words.
That's the spirit.
I do that. I rip off lawyers' letters all the time. They say, here's a contract. I'm like, okay, cross that out.
Yeah, exactly. That's well, yeah, is that ripping off? Because I've done some lawyering myself.
Exactly.
I have a fat note.
It's like, well, I can just copy this line here and put that right there. And just put
and is this a Shure microphone or is it made in China? Oh, hang on a second.
Well, the world is a big ripoff, isn't it?
So, the world's a big ripoff. We're in the wrong business. And what else was the thing you said?
I've given up. I don't know.
Oh, copy other people's emails.
Copy other people's emails. Yeah. Might like that.
Wow. All I'm thinking is, how am I going to segue from that to phase?
Phase?
Well, those noise-canceling headphones on that Bose puts out.
Yeah.
When I put those on, I feel like it's like sucking my brain through a singularity.
It is.
I can't stand it.
Going on an airplane for 5-6 hours, and I'm like, what?
It feels like a black hole's been introduced in the center of my brain, and that it just, that is the feeling of phase.
But here's the thing. Well, first of all, before we even start, we're going to talk a little bit about phase, because it's probably one of the most overused and least understood, and you can check, you see phase problems from not only the way you record, but your wiring and all kinds of things, and it can cause you a lot of headache. Bobby, why don't you explain, because you're like the walking...
Professor Bobby!
Shout out, right, here we go again.
Bobby, give us a phase lift.
Give us a little lesson on phase, Bobby. What is phase?
The English way.
Professor Bobby!
Right, there you go.
Let's talk about phase.
Okay, then. So the term phase refers to the typical... phase... Essentially, when people talk about phase, things are out of phase, they... Lots of the time the term is used incorrectly slightly, but either way, essentially how to understand phase is very, very simple. If you look at a sine wave, if you can imagine a sinusoidal sine wave, basically, making one...
Like that email you sent out.
Exactly. Oh, you're a good man. See, that's the perfect phase. Basically, a sine wave, it goes up and it goes down. Let's just say if people can imagine that, because obviously I'm waving my hand in the air and it's for radio, so it doesn't really do much good. But either way, from the beginning of the cycle to the end of the cycle is a complete 360-degree... It's one cycle. Just to give you a clue of what's going on. So basically, if you've got a sine wave... And you start at the beginning, let's call that zero right now, and you go to the end of that one cycle of sine wave, that's called 360 degrees, which it does one complete cycle. So what you can do is, if you have a sine wave that emulates from, let's just say, out of a speaker now, let's just say, and imagine you could see it in the air, that sine wave would be starting at zero and ending at zero, let's just say, making one nice little sine wave across the room, let's just say. If you had another sound source generating exactly that same sound, and the two speakers were identically next to each other, in so that the two sine waves started identically together, that would be considered, I'm using this very loosely, but I'm just giving you trying to paint a visual concept of phase. That would be considered 0 degrees in phase. That would be considered in phase. And the resultant would be a coupling of the sound. The sound would be 3 dB, or it would double in sound at volume. So the two sounds would join on each other and make it be louder. So it would be an additive effect. That is in phase, let's just say. Now, let's just imagine you have those same two speakers and you shift that speaker down the line by a half of that sine wave cycle. So you actually put it where the sine wave is starting to cut through the zero line again once it's done the first half cycle, and you then started those two sounds up again. What you would have is a sine wave on top of another sine wave, but exactly inverted. So the one sine wave would be generating positive sound, and the other sine wave would be generating the exact same negative energy, and they would be summed together and equal zero. So you would, that was
plus 5 and minus 5 equals...
Hello. So there you go. So you get that would be zero, and we were talking about noise cancelling headphones and MS miking. We weren't talking about MS miking, but anyway, there's a lot of recording concepts and lots of bits of gear out there these days. Noise cancelling headphones are exactly what that concept is. It takes common sound that comes to your ears and adds them together, and inverts this by 180 degrees and adds them together, and thereby resultantly gives you zero of that common sound. So that's how it gets rid of a common tone. You know, in those headphones, for example, we go, if you're hearing that sort of thing,
right,
it would hear them both equally, then revert one side and and cancel it out.
And give you a full brain suck.
It does. It has a twisting sensibility to your ears.
Yeah. The thing with phase is, I mean, phase gets, I won't get complicated, but phase is the way we localize things. That, and as it was lots of studies done with this a long time ago, but just using phase as a common thing. We use phase every day in audio, analog audio, with common mode noise rejection. Every day you make a phone call down a copper wire, they've got twisted copper pairs, and that's called common mode noise rejection. They're using the concept of phase equal power inverted, adding to each other equals zero, so it cancels out common noise. So that's how phase really.
Which is interesting for noise reduction, which we talked about on another show.
And you use phase just when you're out walking around and hearing things, the way sound reverberates against, you know, certain environments
acoustics.
And things like that.
Well, there is it. So I'll just go back to that silly old sine wave example. Imagine that you have two sine waves coming from two speakers equal distance apart, hitting you and hitting you in the ears. If you heard that, you would think that the sound is coming from in front of you, in front of your nose, basically.
Right.
But if somebody then took one of those speakers either and moved it away from you or inserted a digital delay, for want of a better term, and put like a microscopic millisecond or 3-millisecond delay on it, essentially what that would be doing is delaying that those sine waves from being exactly in time with each other by offsetting it by an amount. It may be 80 degrees, 180 degrees, 10 degrees, 2 degrees, whatever. And your brain would say, hey, this sound is out of time with the sound, and you would realize the sound source is being off to the right or the left or however it is. So that is the concept of the bad side effect of, I don't know, we're going to get there, of recording with multiple mics in a situation where you have two microphones set up that are recording a mono sound source. A mono sound source is kind of silly to say, but either way, a guy hitting a drum, it's a single beat, let's just say, in front of you, and you've got two mics set up. If those two mics are set up in a way which one mic is a lot further away than the other one, it may be a certain sound, but of one being distant and one being close, but the truth of the matter is, what you're actually hearing is the phase difference between the close mic and the far mic, and your brain is saying, hey, this mic is further away than that mic. So if you want to do stereo miking, A-B miking technique, or 101 miking technique, A-B, two mics at a triangle on a single sound source, if you do that sort of thing by moving one mic closer to the sound source and the other one further away, you paint a stereo image of that instrument that you're recording being off to the right or left, however you choose, by not panning it. You're actually not. There's equal volume. There's equal recording power being put to your recorded tape. I was going to use the word, but either way, to your digital recorder. Right. But it will actually sound like it's off to the right, and that's because of the phase shift. And of course, there's many other hundreds of different ways.
A phase shift is in everything. I mean, all the ambiences, because he's talking about a single wave.
Sure, because I had to simplify.
But every frequency is either coupling and adding, or subtracting, or smudging.
Comb filtering is this.
Yes.
So a lot of phase, just so we can, explain this even a little simpler, is the, when you get like phase effects and phase shifts, it's the interaction of the sound waves with each other.
That
can be used as a destructive thing, and it can be used as a positive thing.
It's a creative thing.
And you can, if you can master phase and know what it is and understand what it is, then you can start using
it. Well, it's like for the guitar players, the Strat.
Right.
When you want to get into those the in between pickups, it has kind of that
out of phase sound.
Out of phase sound. It's kind of thinner. Usually things that are out of phase has a little more thinner. Usually use a little bit. You definitely lose the low end first.
Yep.
Then it kind of gives you this kind of high mid rangey, almost nasal quality, which is kind of really cool in a guitar.
Right.
But if you're doing drums, unless you're looking for that specific effect, which most people aren't, that's why great pains are taken in when you're recording anything. If you want that sound, great. If you don't, then you've got to start making sure that you're controlling phase aspects.
There's a thing where, when you start using analog pieces of equipment, they inherently have time delay. Phase is time delay. When you put EQ, an analog EQ on something, and you change the EQ, boost or cut the sound, you're actually changing the phase. You're changing the amplitude and at a certain frequency with a certain resonance. But let's just say that LC network or that resistor capacitor network or whatever you're doing is actually putting time shift at certain frequencies in that signal path.
I got you.
And it is also increasing the gain of it, but thereby also changing the sonic value of it. So when you start EQing one track and EQing the exact identical track and laying on top of each other, you start to get strange sorts of effects, not that you think you would get. And that's kind of where the electronic phases, that's where that concept comes from. They modulate those frequency on top of each other.
Now, let me ask you guys, and anybody can answer, what are some of the problems that you can have with phase? Obviously, we know, 180 degrees.
Lack of low end.
I mean, constellation, but what other symptoms are like could
whole,
be a phase problem?
The whole mix just starts moving away from your face. It's like it was really evident on early Mix Plus 888s. Remember that? Oh my gosh, the smear on that.
The lack of imaging.
The lack of imaging. And the harder you work on the mix, the more it pulled away from your face.
Yeah.
Stuff that was you wanted close.
If you want a visual equivalent, find the best HD TV that's super, super sharp. That's kind of in phase. Then if you want to go to TV and it starts smudging a little bit, it's right. It's not wrong. It's not as clear.
Well.
And then if you go to film, which is really soft, the phase is even... I'm not talking like 180 degrees out of phase. But I'm talking about slight phase. But sometimes you want that. Like I know for the things that I do, is if I want to, I know it sounds silly, Foley. I hate Foley that's dead on because it sounds very clear, very bright, very crisp, and very unrealistic. Meanwhile, when they've got a microphone and it's slightly off, I call it the schmutz factor. It's the New Yorker in me. and I want things to have a much more organic feel, which means it's not dead on. So I use phase as a tool.
So, wait, that's interesting. So when you're doing Foley footsteps,
I'll park the
mic to the side and have them walk on
absolutely.
The side just so you're getting the side.
On American Beauty, I needed it to sound so... that whole show was like reproduced. I needed it to sound like the ambience. I had a shotgun mic in a tub across the room as they were doing some of the movements. Because that was the sound that I said, I can't get it. I'm not matching it. And I went, ooh, like this is much better.
Genius! No, seriously, that's awesome because I can't tell you how many times as a mixer I've gotten Foley that is so stinking clean, you would think that they were walking on like the most perfect surface known to mankind. And I'm like, and you're dirtying up and I'm throwing EQ and I'm doing all kinds of stuff, you know? And I'm like.
Sometimes you need it, but it's like when I was doing Gamer, the movie that came last. About 2 days. And what was interesting was we did Foley and it was very sterile, very bright, very perfect. And for that, people, when we were pre-dubbing it, they're like, that's just going to work. And when I first got it, I wasn't sure, but then I put all of the gun battles in. Perfect.
Oh, that's good.
Because it was clean. I didn't want blur.
Right, right.
I wanted pristine, so when it cut, and then it was off.
Because one thing I was thinking about doing, I didn't have the time, but I was getting ready just to re-record the Foley. I was going to send the Foley out through a speaker and bounce set a microphone up and just re-mic it because it was,
call that worldizing.
Yeah, it was so clean.
You could use a virtual reverb, it would kind of get you the same
thing. Yeah, I just had a thing this week where I had three voiceover artists and it was supposed to be kind of like a spontaneous thing, but the mix the way they provided me the tracks, all these tracks are right on, and so I just put a small plate on somebody on the second voiceover and a little bit larger plate on the third to get out of that AM radio thing where everybody's right on the mic just like this.
I've got two things just to sum up on the phasey thing for the home gamers, for people listening. If you guys, people listening at home, if you have a set of speakers that have actual wires going into them and you can actually unplug them, try this. It's real simple. Put on some music and take one of the speakers and take the wire out of the one speaker only one speaker and change. There must be a red and a black wire possibly, but turn them around, so whatever connector they were in, revert them. So you'll have one speaker in phase and one speaker out of phase. Then sit in the middle and have a listen and see what it does to you. And you'll start to hear a lack of focus on lower frequencies. And then once you do that, try if you can get the two speakers close together. This is how I used to work out mixes when I was a kid. Get those same two speakers that are out of phase and physically face them towards each other so they're barely about an inch apart. And also line them up so if there's a tweeter and a woofer in the speaker system, make sure the tweeter faces the tweeter and the woofer faces the woofer. And that's basically, as you bring those two speakers together, you'll start to hear the center channel occur, or rather everything that is center channel rather disappear in the mix, and you'll actually start to get rid of the center channel. You start to hear all the reverbs.
Wow.
And just the background vocals, and it's kind of a cool thing to do for a learning concept.
Bobby, is that the same thing as the XY pattern that creates a line of phase cancellation over the drum overheads? Is that the same?
That's the same kind of concept. Yeah, you know,
it's just a deadline, which makes a bigger spread, right?
It does. You know, if you're talking about XY, okay, yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. Really, no. Actually, the XY, those two mics are actually
it's
in
this
phase.
Way.
Yeah, or those way. But yeah, exactly. Same sort of thing. Two capsules, basically, like this. Those two mics are actually in phase. They positively check out. I have a couple
but
of phase...
But ORTF, if you don't do it right.
Well, of course, it will sound strange.
Yeah.
I have a couple of phase guns I use because I always check mics when I go to studios that I don't know the miking, the cables and everything. And it's one that sends out a positive going... A thud that goes dup,
right.
Dup, dup,
right.
And I go and put it on the speaker in the control room, and I check every mic and make sure they're all in phase. As all I want to know is they're in phase. That I'll play around with the phase, and I do. I change phase by 30 degrees and 80 degrees and put EQ and tricky stuff. But I don't. I want to know it's where it is when I start off, because it's really hard to get back. And the last thing about phase is everybody thinks, oh, multiple mics, groovy, groovy, groovy. The best sounding drum kit you'll record is setting up one mic and putting in front of a good sounding balanced drummer.
Yeah.
It will sound smoking and punchy. Why? Because there's only one mic and nothing is out of phase.
Right.
Because
right.
You've got nothing to confuse the issue.
Right.
Well, chest high, about 10 feet out.
But in big concert systems and theater systems, not only do they check the phase of the speakers, but they check the phase of the components.
Cool.
And yeah. Then you'll find out, because you got a horn and it's stepped back a little bit, now all of a sudden the phase is slightly off. So by just going into a horn and adjusting the high-end frequency phase
right.
against the rest of the mix, you can actually make it clearer.
You have to have time. You have delay lines as well.
Yeah.
So I have a good story that actually I went out to dinner with Bobby and Rob last night, and I told them, but it has to do with phase, and it's also... You know, a little rule that I
how sad
by.
Is that, by the way, that we go to dinner and sit around telling phase stories? I mean, what a bunch of geeks.
That's true. Huh? I got a phone call from a client of mine, and they wanted me to come over and to fix a mix on a show for a cable TV. It was an hour show, and the guy was all panicky. And what had happened was the VO was recorded to Beta SP, and the deck, one of the channels, was out of phase. So they recorded the VO in Beta SP, and it went down with one channel out of phase to the other. Then they took that and they digitized it into the Pro Tools, and so it's still out of phase. The guy mixed it all down, the whole show. He used both channels of VO. I don't know why, but he used both channels. So it was still out of phase.
To keep the phase relationship.
Well, so you hear it in stereo and you hear the VO. Well, as soon as you hear it on mono and they collapse everything together, the VO went away. The narrator is gone. And they were totally panicking and like, well, what happened? What happened? You know, and sure enough, when I checked the session and we did that, and so I fixed that problem. Actually, I just muted one whole channel and just brought it up, and it solved the whole problem. But that was a case of, you know, it was a cable on the deck that took them out, you know. And they may have been monitoring only one channel when they recorded the VO session, you know, which to me is, you know, a cardinal rule is if you don't have to have it two channels, if you're not going to do it in stereo, then do it in mono so you don't get those problems in the first place.
But, you know, you talk about phase and you can talk about tools. Dolby Pro Logic or Dolby Stereo is all phase-based. So what happens is if any two sounds play together exactly in the left and right speaker, it automatically puts it in the center. So the only thing that's separated is left and right. Anything that's exactly the same material, a.k.a. the phantom center, gets put into the center speaker. Anything that's out of phase goes into the surround. So what happens is when you do mixes, if you're not careful, and let's say... they had a radio mic and a boom mic, and it goes out of phase. For a split second, the dialogue goes flying into the surrounds and comes back. And you're like, what the f*** was that? So, great pain. So now you go, yeah, well, that was then. With every six-track we make, we've got to do a Dolby Stereo version. which we call an LTRT.
Right.
So when we do that, we have to check everything through a decoder, 424 box.
Right.
So a lot of times, I used to mess with mixers because I'd give them a stereo like a helicopter. And at that time, I remember it was great. The version was like, at that time it was called the ADAP, but now it would be like SoundForge, where you can actually go into a sound and flip the phase via region.
ADAP.
Hybrid arts. Isn't that great?
Hybrid arts. Hybrid great arts. Sounding. Yeah. Hybrid case sample rate.
I would do is you can actually just pick a region and flip the phase without having to cut it.
That's weird.
You just highlight it, flip the phase. So I would be doing, and the mixer would have a stereo effect. All of a sudden, I was doing all these weird, like, speaker movement stuff. Like, all of a sudden, things are flying around the room, and it's coming. He's like, what? My panner. I didn't do anything. Because he was listening to the decoder, it would automatically start doing it for him.
Wow.
So he was doing, like aircraft buys. And it would usually freak out the mixers because they weren't sure, like, what just happened.
Did they ever go, stop it?
No, they go, Scott, get in here. You messing with me again? Yeah.
We used to have to put, when I used to mix music and for those sorts of things and for films, I used to have to end up chewing up like 8 or 9, even more, short DDLs, SDE3000s they were called, and used to put them on like 20 milliseconds, 18 milliseconds, just to make sure the things wouldn't get sucked into the center. Hmm. And just make sure, because if it's a decent, it was about 14 milliseconds, 15 milliseconds was the sweet spot, but anything too wide, The encoder used to like it and keep them nice and stereo, but if it's music, it starts to sound like a flam, so you couldn't really.
Yeah.
He's like, I want the bongos to be on the out in the stereo, but you have to put a delay on the thing to keep them out, but then it starts getting like this flammy thing. Lots of times you hear movies mixed back in the day like that. Yeah. You often hear like, and you think, what the hell is the dude doing? Right. And he had this delay on there trying to keep the thing out.
But then you hear like a lot of record guys when we were doing films, they'd go, oh, we're going to play our song on the theater. Boom! The biggest mono mix you've ever heard. Because everything's like, yeah, we got a little bit of left and right separation, but everything's pretty much phantom center. And it comes out of one freaking speaker right in the middle, and it sounds really small.
Wow. And it's always a lousy sounding speaker.
Well, we're going to wrap up this talk on phase, but before we go, what kind of advice do you got for people so that they stay out of phase problems? I mean, obviously, you want to make sure your studio is wired correctly.
Just absolutely.
All the lefts are going down the lefts, all the rights are going down the rights.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's localization. But just basically make sure that if you're using microphones and if you're using wires, of course, make sure that they are starting off at zero phase or in phase. But I suggest absolutely people play around with delays, very short delays. I'm not talking 20 milliseconds. I'm saying start off with 0.1 millisecond, 0.2 milliseconds. Then start playing with EQs because that's shifting phase. You will start to get much better sounding stereo perspective with an instrument by painting it with phase as opposed to painting with a panner. That's for babies. You don't go pan something to the right unless you're like 101. It's like, dude, put the sound on the right and then EQ it and change it over and put a microscopic delay on the left and you'll have a stereo image from a mono source. That's basically what a lot of plugins do these days, but that's how you do it.
And Bobby had a good thing, though. I mean, and I don't want to fluff that. Understand what phase sounds like. Because once you understand what it sounds like, you'll start hearing it in everything.
All right.
And even, like, remember the BBE? The little box? I used to play with low-end. And you're kind of getting so much more low end out of it. It was playing phase adjustments.
Yeah, definitely.
Where the low end. Because a lot of times I'll put a sub hit a quarter frame early, not later, because how it phase aligns with the rest of the sound. So even though you could do first mods, there's a lot of phase. You can use it as a great tool.
That's cool.
And you really do hear it better on speakers than headphones, just by the way. So when you play around with the headphones, you won't actually hear the effect as well. You don't really hear the effect as well as learn to understand the sound of phasing with two speakers and make sure the speakers and your head, your two ears, are equal triangle apart.
And even flanging. Flanging is a good idea when you start hearing how it thins the sound out. That's phasing.
Yeah.
One other thing about phase, if you're working on music and there's any chance that it's going to go to vinyl, which is the hip new thing.
Oh, yeah, that's a good one.
Make sure your kick drums and bass are not in stereo at all.
Yeah.
Because on a turntable, when you have the stylus moving through the groove, phase issues can actually have the stylus just jump out. I mean, the needle can jump out of the record.
Yeah.
So it's really important, all your low-frequency stuff,
important.
Make sure it's mono.
Yeah. Bill, you got anything on phase? Any tips, hints?
Nope. No, the way to hear phase is stand somewhere in traffic. And then...
That sounds dangerous.
Stand in the road.
Yeah. Stand in traffic, and then lower your head down, you know, or go down to your knees, and listen to what happens. That's just comb filtering, and that's one way to hear it.
We are in Hollywood, aren't we?
Wow.
I can just imagine the guys are going to be listening to the guy. Let me try that thing. Let me turn on my speakers and reverse those wires. And then they say, well, I'm going to try and stand in the traffic. Put my head down.
Brandon, you're a sound designer. Do you use phase? Do you use a lot of phase stuff?
One tool that I do use, and I've talked about this before, that actually visually has a good representation of exactly what Bobby's talking about with the sine waves is, again, the auto panner in Ableton. You can... It has the two waves on there, and you can mess with the phase, and you see the actual sine waveform just like sliding
that's
over
cool.
as it's going out of fame or out of phase.
That's a great, that's a good cool. example. That's exactly it.
Mark, Mike, phase, any phase tips for people out
oh,
there?
Oh, yeah. You know, Jimmy going.
There you go.
All right. Well, yeah, thanks for all the tips. You know, really quick, you know, when you're talking about using delays, you know, what people have to realize when they want to get that vocal sound where it's coming from both sides of the heads, you know, that's not just somebody panning. That's actually, you know, using those little micro delays like you're talking about to give that illusion and gives you that really good vocal thing. So that's a good place to start.
But there's also a lot of technology that will make, quote unquote, 3D audio out of two speakers.
Right.
And what they're doing, it's all about phase.
Phase.
They're doing phase manipulation to make it feel like it's behind you.
RSS. Remember that old RSS and Q-Sound?
Yeah. Scott and I did the demos for RSS. Yeah.
Wow, that's cool.
We did that together for a while, right? Yeah.
Well, that was a good lesson on phase there, Bobby. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
And actually, we got to thank Mike because he was the one who wanted to talk about phase. Tonight.
Oh, did you?
Yeah. So.
It's real hard to explain. I mean, it's very hard. It's nearly impossible to explain without a picture. You know, it's kind of like we're doing the radio explanation here. It's pretty tough.
Yeah, they hear about it with a snare drum. You mic the top and the bottom and then like flipping phase and they just get all confused and lost in it all.
Yeah.
Well, that's great. All right. Well, hey, we're gonna wrap it up. Boy, this one went really quick. But before we go, I want to introduce a really special guest. My friend Mark Bowers is here.
Mark! Yay!
Mark Bowers, he got me started in music. He taught me drums.
Come on, give us a beat.
And he taught me the most important. I learned a triplet from Mark Bowers.
Oh.
And once I learned my first triplet, it just
it's been downhill since.
He's been waltzing ever since.
No, Mark's a vocal coach, and he's a really good player still, and he does a lot of theater down in Fallbrook, California and stuff. So
cool.
It's really cool.
Amazing.
So before we go, Rob, are you working on anything? We heard a fantastic mix in your studio, that 5-1 of one of your artists. That was amazing.
That was a pretty cool one.
That was cool. Are you working on anything interesting that you can talk about?
What are we working on? We're still getting all the different artists for my label's projects done. We've got 6 albums in various states of completion, which is cool. We also, actually just today, wrote some music for a trailer for a new film coming out. I don't know if I'm allowed to say the name yet or not. But it's a Sony picture. And it's I'll talk about it next time.
Great.
But it's nice. We've been doing a lot less trailer music because so much more of it is just using licensed cues these days.
Right.
But we actually got a composing gig, which was nice because it's all we used to do. So it was pretty hilarious because it was actually a pretty easy job. And they asked us, you know, is there any way we could do this? It's like, yeah, I think so. And the whole job took, you know, 3 hours. But it was really a lot of fun, and I do miss the old days.
Was that the one you used that horn?
Yeah, the Broadway
on?
Big Band library.
Dude, that really quick. We got to talk about that.
That library is awesome.
It has all these different articulations on the lower keys, much like a symphonic library was, and just the
but
brass.
But it's just for the instruments of a Broadway big band.
Yeah.
I mean, it has all the instruments of a Broadway big band, like banjo and all this other stuff, but what we use it for is just the horns, and they're just amazing. If you
really
need
good.
Solo sax, solo trumpet, solo trombone. It's just really, really amazing.
That's cool. It's really cool.
And we've done, like, for James Brown sounding stuff, you know, it's really hard to get those kinds of horn sounds out of a library, but yeah, this does it.
The trills and all the fall-offs and things like that. It's amazing. It Bill, you working on anything? I know you were in Texas, right? You were doing some recording out there?
I spent a week in Manhattan recording some audio stuff and actually sound effects and shooting video, all for this Sonic branding project in Austin, which we presented in Dallas last week.
Wow.
It's kind of cool because it was mixing Sonic or just sound effects and Sonic elements, Sonic branding with Keynote. So I was doing the Keynote and all the stuff, the audio stuff. And then I had a track that I kind of co-arranged play on the Macy's Day Parade the whole way.
Wow.
I mean, the girl got up there and sung it the whole time, and I'm just thinking, oh, who's getting the royalties for that? You know, she was, obviously, but it was Disney, and I got bought out. You can't get any royalties for that. So,
Brandon, you doing anything? You working on any? What's your latest trailer?
I feel like we're still on all the same projects, but Alice in Wonderland did some... just got a very new track from Jonesy, the lead singer of Sigur Rós, and did a re-edit today for a new Alice in Wonderland spot that looks really cool.
So that's cool.
Excited about that.
And Scott, what about you?
Nothing.
You're going to the stage tomorrow.
I am.
Season of where?
I've been on the same film, Season of the Witch, since March. And I can't say we're even finishing at this point. We're going in and mixing some more. We got some reshoot new material. And I don't know if I said last time, I ended up remastering and redesigning Mimic for Guillermo del Toro.
Right, I remember you saying a little bit about that.
So that was kind of fun and interesting to see what was done 13 years ago and how we're modifying it. And, you know, that's pretty much it.
Great. Bobby, what about you?
We had... Baxter on the show a couple of months ago.
Right.
Dear Baxter.
He's awesome. He's from Reflex.
From Reflex,
politics
exactly.
Politics are dancing.
The politics are dancing. Anyway, he did a solo album about 150 years ago after the politics are dancing that I did with him, and nothing happened with it. No. Basically, he's doing another record now 150 years later. And the drummer that played on that is coming out from England. He's going to might stay with me or Baxter, I think, and we're cutting drums at my place for a couple of days.
Oh, that's cool.
That's going to be in the next week.
And Mike, what are you doing?
Let's see. I just finished mixing. I picked up a client, Guitar Center.
Wow.
So I'm going to have to talk all nice things about Guitar Center from now on.
GC Bro.
Sunday.
You know what? The people are really cool.
Didn't Best Buy buy them?
No, Best Buy has their own little music thing happening.
Oh, I thought they bought GC.
Yeah, no, they have their own thing.
Yeah.
So I've been doing a little bit of that, but now it's coming down the holidays, so things are kind of slowing down a little bit, thank goodness. You know, so it's kind of fun. Playing video games in your bay on the big TV with the fire once around.
Is that what you're doing now?
No, Brandon, I'm working hard. I'm on the 6th floor. Brandon's on the 12th floor. So. but we're doing that. Mike, Mark, what are you guys up to? Well, first of all, I got to tell you something, man. I've known Mike and Mark for almost, 25 years.
So you guys were like six.
Yeah.
Yeah, pretty much, yeah.
No, we actually... First grade. We played a couple gigs together, you know, for different youth activities down there, and it's pretty... It's like a reunion between Mark and Mike and Mark. It's like, it's my musical past coming to haunt me.
Yeah. It's a reunion of Mike and Mark.
All played.
See, that's out of phase because of the delay when you said that.
Jeez.
It's Orange County, right?
Yeah.
Orange County?
South Orange County.
South Orange County.
Oh, it was the life, man. It was the life.
I'm just trying to think of your parents was that a life. What should we call it? Mark.
We got two options.
I got a little boy. What are we going to call it? Mark. We call it Mike, save confusion.
No, this was the life. I'll tell you what, because like my brother's here also, Ben's here, but we used to clean office buildings. This is one of those, you know, jobs that you have when you're growing up.
Yeah.
And we used to clean office buildings. We would clean, an office building. We'd work in the evening. We'd go down to the beach. We'd fall asleep at the beach. We'd get up. We'd go, you know, body surfing and skimboarding. We'd go home, enough time, take a shower, to go back to clean office buildings that night and to report the whole thing. And Mark actually had a dune buggy. You know one of those dune buggies?
Mars Max.
That's happened. That's killer.
That was a great growing up, but... But it's good to have you guys out here, you know, and I know you guys are going to be working on a few things. I know you're working on another album and going to be doing that. So looking forward to that. Other than that, if you have any comments or questions for any of the guys here on the Audio Nowcast, you can reach us at audio@nowcastnetwork.com. That's audio@nowcastnetwork.com. You can also check us out on our Facebook page, which is facebook.com/audio nowcast. And I would say MySpace, but does anybody really use MySpace anymore?
No.
I mean, there's a technology that's just...
come and gone.
All right, so once again, if you want to get in touch with us, it's audio@nowcastnetwork.com. It's audio@nowcastnetwork.com. And for myself, most of the guys, we'll catch you next time. See ya.
Thanks for listening to the Audio Nowcast, sponsored by Aphex and Westwave Audio. The Audio Nowcast is hosted by Mike Rodriguez with Rob Arbatier, Scott Gershon, Martin Page, Andrew Sheps, and Bobby Summerfield. The program is produced by April Mastropaulo and uses Aphex's 230 Master Channel Voice Processor. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.